We coined real gameplay quite some years ago now. I guess 2015 or 16. And what we do is we take live action role-playing elements. So in a sense, all of the players who play in a core Modus role-play a different character. But we also work a lot with the space called Bleed, which is from LARP communities. They also refer to Bleed, which is the space between role-playing and what we would understand as our everyday life. And when everyday life and role-playing come together in this moment in between, that's what's called Bleed. And that's where we set a lot of our works. The idea behind it is very much that, well, in a way, reality is like this kind of manifestation always. We don't actually believe there is a reality as such. It's basically a reality is a shared situation that's manifested by all who share it. So even in what we do, we don't believe it to be an illusion. It's just another possible existence that's able to exist because of the social stimulus of everybody who's inside that work at that time. And those can go from like 2 hours to 3 days to 2 months to years.
Maybe we can talk about this in-between space, what you've just mentioned, Bleed. It is meaning the setting, I mean the precise setting, or?
It's both. It's the setting and the player. Basically, this Bleed space for us comes with both the environment and the players. So the environment, so we've done works, you know, with cryptocurrency, also like collective dreaming spaces. And we basically have created environments that are possibly near futures or could possibly exist. So that already gives us kind of a Bleed space because its believability is very close. And then also the way in which we kind of encourage the players to work is that we encourage them to draw in on their everyday reality and their characters. So we often liken it to this position of a leech. So when the leech sucks on your blood, you actually become another hybrid space. You don't die from the leech sucking on your blood. You create like a coexisting environment. And that's actually the way that we see it, is that either at some point during the immersion, then you as your everyday self is the leech and your character or new identity is your body. And then that can also switch, like your new identity can become the leech and your body can become your everyday. So it's very much this kind of fluid space where you exercise both personalities. Then eventually one of them will become stronger than the other, and we hope this is actually your new identity. And then that's when kind of interesting things start to happen.
But maybe coming back to get an image of this game, could you make an example where, for example, it happens and what is the frame, just that we can get an image of it?
I mean, it depends on the game. So I guess, for example, the piece that you read, this was a crypto rave. So it actually takes part in a club. And we've done this in Berlin, in Barcelona, and also in Athens. And this takes place inside an everyday club. It kind of gets a bit complicated because we do various different layers of play. You can have a very light experience, which would just be to come to the crypto rave in character. You can have a slightly deeper experience, which means coming to a workshop and then going to the crypto rave. The workshops are normally 5 to 6 hours, and they help you submerse yourself much deeper in your character and the environment. And then if you want to go on full immersion, we normally choose around 8 people, and they do a workshop for 6 hours or so. Then we basically give them an apartment and a storyline, and you're with different players, and you're in game for around 72 hours.
And you create also, it's also expanding this game into, or expanding, I mean, it's also related to almost everybody's real life is the internet somehow, or social networks and characters in there. So the players have then also, new Facebook prisons. Yeah, and
depending on the character, you would be given some. I mean, for example, also we've been known to give phones out, which gives you like a completely new phone identity. So, for example, if I gave you Tatum's phone, on the phone you would have different contacts. You would have email account, potentially an Instagram account, so forth, different apps. Maybe somebody else has had that phone before you who was Tatum, so you have all of their backstory of how they played the character, and then you get the history of that character is already embedded inside the devices. But of course, what's on those devices is that you're also playing with people who are not in play. And that's actually why we're different to LARP.
Talking about reality maybe again, because you said just before that it's something we agree to. And there are other possibilities for creating another kind of reality we could also agree to. Can you maybe make it a bit more precise which kind of hope you place in the play or in the game or in the player you awoke also?
The only kind of hope in a way is that the player or user will see a new potentiality for the reality in which they live in. I mean, what our work tries to do is show people how easy it is to change their environment. I guess one could say, like, we have like anarchist ideals behind this, in a sense that we believe that a lot of the world that we live in is a kind of illusionary cage. And when enough people believe something else, that's when you have the potential to change it. So we're almost, in a sense, we're offering an environment to see a possible future in the everyday. We just want to basically achieve plasticity. And we want to give everybody who experiences the work the skills to create their own plasticity outside of the work, whether that's something of an individual nature or something of a much larger social scale. We're trying to teach skills of change.
I was thinking, because of course you are creating a certain kind of setting. It's not about behaving in another way just for behaving in another way. I mean, it's about maybe to teach utopian thinking or also action, but how do you maybe have experienced or expect the players to behave differently, or is it just a wrong idea to imagine this in a way?
There's one thing that I can say for certain, like, you have no idea how a player is going to behave at all. That is something that is completely at that player's whim. And it's also, which is actually why it's so exciting to do this type of work for us, because we can lay out all the needed apparatus, but then how it gets used is going to be different every single time. Like, there's no way that you can play the same piece ever when you add different people in. And as far as utopian, there is utopian spaces, but they're not necessarily so easy to see whilst you're in the game. The utopian aspect of it is that it needs full commitment and a full community to actually make it exist. It's such a fragile piece of work. If you imagine to try to get 10, 30 people who've never role played before, some of them, to commit to being another person in another existence that's completely fabricated for 3 days, I mean, we assumed it would fail, to be totally honest, but it didn't. And I think that's like the most beautiful and enlightening part of it, that it's absolute chaos, confusion, and we have no control over it. That's another part of us thinking of a utopia, is that we don't have control over a utopia. We cannot shape a utopia. And why it's not utopian, I guess it's because, depending on your character, you can feel absolute euphoria or absolute hell. I mean, we don't just have beautiful, great characters. There's always a dark side to these characters. Sometimes that comes out. And I mean, even as somebody who's played in various different games, sometimes I've had a really beautiful, connecting experience. And then other times I've felt completely alienated, cried, and felt terrible. But then once you come out of it, it has both has a cathartic effect. If you can learn tools that don't pull you down but build you up, and petition and manifest spaces, I think that in essence is the tools that we need today with the world that we live in. And so those positions of utopia are not necessarily always seen. They're almost like the shadows of what's actually happened.
I also don't think that we should make an image of the utopian world we want to live in. I mean, that doesn't make sense. It's about a process, and I guess you are creating a space for processes also. I have another question regarding the term lucidity, because you used it in connection to real gameplays. What does it mean? Is it a tool to, or is it a state of mind which comes if you, as you said, if you are fully committed to the game? Is it something players could achieve while they play?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, that we aim for lucidity to be achieved. And this is actually mostly by hacking common nodes of perception and taught identity. And lucidity is not a state that normally when we think of somebody being lucid, we assume that they have taken some sort of experimental narcotics or have reached this like very kind of meditative higher being and so forth. And these are kind of, it's probably more the latter. In a meditative space, we don't always take narcotics to green. I'm joking, we don't. But the idea is that, lucidity is a point that the human mind can gain themselves. We really kind of believe that fiction or should I say, play is like not really theory, nor is it kind of its negation, but it's just simply something else. And theory has a kind of simple role to make itself understood, whereas fiction does not. But fiction is the apparatus needed before theory can be set up. And that moment of lucidity is also what we see as fiction. And that fiction can be, again, on like multiple different levels of the fiction that is Omsk's work, or the fiction that's going on in the individual player's head, or the fiction that's going on in the hive mind of all the players at that moment. And those are like just three very basic sets of lucidity that occur in the duration of play. And then, of course, there's like also tiny breaks and curves. And I mean, also moments of lucidity, you don't necessarily know that they're lucid until you look back on them. And because you're so immersed in them, lucidity can be very real.
It's a game, it's a play, but it's also happening in the artistic field. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's actually true, but it could be also a performance, which is sometimes also exhibited. Which kind of role does the audience play, actually, or is there always an audience?
We work a lot in art galleries, but there is no audience. We see our players as viewers, but you cannot come in and just watch something going on in front of you. So in essence, if you want to be a viewer, you have to participate. And in that sense, you will be given a new identity. If you slip through the net somehow, I mean, we're not like completely testing everybody at the door. But if you slip through the net, you will also have to participate in that shared reality. People won't just let you walk around and watch them. They're told very ardently in every sense, and we try to stop it, that there is no performative element. They are not being watched. They are not performing. This is the kind of line between, I would say, performance and role play. Performance has a certain position to be observed as an artifact of art. What we're doing is, I would say, you could maybe say that it's closer to improvised theater potentially, but then it's not, because we try our hardest not to have actors. There is no pre-educated spaces in that sense. Like we really try for people who just have a kind of interest in the values and beliefs that we do and the philosophy that we do. You don't need to have ever had any kind of acting or coaching or wanted to act or be a performer, or because in essence, in that way, you could say that everybody in the world is role-playing. And I think that's more of the position we like to take, is that, I mean, this is also a political space of drawing these concepts, is that we do believe that everybody in the world is playing a role. And it's a role that's being given to us, in essence, or that we've manufactured for ourselves. But what happens when you take another role? Anybody can do that. Like, I could maybe tell you to spend the rest of the day being a student. Maybe you should go to the university, sit in the university library. Or, you know, I mean, would anybody tell you, oh, no, you're not a student? Maybe if you didn't have a card or whatever. But if you were just sitting in the cafeteria, nobody could tell you you weren't. Or it would be very weird if somebody said, like, you're not a student. Because, you know, we do have the ability to play these roles. I can also say that you're not necessarily performing, because I've told you to go to the university to be a student. I don't know. Would you see that as an art performance? I don't think I would. I would see it as an experience.